session with 30292, reel 1.
But first of all, take me right back to your childhood and perhaps your earliest memories.
My earliest memories? Pre-Hitler?
Yes, please. Yes.
Yes, gargling into having my tonsils out at the age of 2 and having to gargle.
Really? Before. You can remember that?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So tell me a bit about the family that you were born into.
Oh, it wasn't a very interesting family. It was an ordinary middle-class family in Vienna. And father, mother, older sister, and grandmother came to live with us later on. And,
what about the neighbourhood where you lived?
Oh, the first one was very nice, in the third district of Vienna. But then we moved into the centre of Vienna, because where my father's business was, I think it was for economic reasons, really, after I was 7. Didn't like that very much. Don't think it's very nice for children to grow up in the, you know, like the centre of London, Piccadilly Circus, no garden or anything. Didn't realise it at the time, but looking back, I don't think it's a very nice place for children to grow up in, really. The suburbs are much nicer, but I guess that was more expensive where we lived before.
And can you remember what the house was like where you lived as a little girl?
Oh, it was just flats. Everybody lived in a flat. Yes, it was. Yeah, I've been there since, a third floor flat, and you went up in a Baroque lift, very ancient. And that's how most children spent their childhood. And you know, you have to be very wealthy to live in a house in the suburbs. I've been there several times since.
And what was your father's job?
My father was a businessman. And the business was in the flat, so his father did it also, but it wasn't the same business. Very boring.
And so as a little girl growing up, you had an elder sister. Yes. And how much older than you was she?
She was 3 years older. Yes.
And so did you go to the same school?
No, we never did, actually. Because she started when we lived in the other house. I suppose she went to that nearest school. And by the time we moved, and she went on going to that school. But I went to the nearest school, the school that was nearer to the new flat, which was actually quite a well-known school, the Schwarzwaldschule.
Tell me a bit more about the school.
Well, I can't an awful lot, but I know a lot of probably came to see me once, who lives in... I can't remember her name now, but she's an English girl who lives in Vienna and married to a Viennese, and she's doing research on that school, and she somehow traced me. But I can't even remember how I got into that school, because I must have passed an exam, but I don't know how I passed it. I wasn't particularly academic. But I haven't heard any more about it, but she's writing. And the reason the school was famous is because the headmistress belonged to a famous literary circle in Vienna. That aren't known here, but I do know who they are, but they wouldn't be known in England. One was an architect and one was a writer of children's stories, and this headmistress was quite progressive, and that's how the school got famous. Whether that was really better academically or not, I don't know. Mm. But I was only there for a year, and then Hitler came.
And the name of the school was?
It's Schwarzwaldschule. I've got the label. You had the label in your museum.
That okay.
was missing.
Yes.
It's, you lost it.
Yes, of course.
Do you remember?
Yes,
and
yes.
I still got it. You sent me a copy.
Right, yes.
That, it was, yeah, tried, yes.
And the name of the headmistress?
Oh, what was it? Well, she's Frau Dr. Schwarzwald. That's right. She had the same name as the school.
As the school.
It was called after her.
I see.
It was a gymnasium, a grammar school for girls.
And so tell me about what happened when Hitler came to power, and how news of that arrived, and reactions in the school.
Well, as I say, I think I didn't honestly feel much about this. I didn't feel any anything, but the non-Jewish children had to sit separately from the Jewish ones. But as I say, we then had to leave the school and go to a Jewish school, which I had to do. But my sister didn't, because she was past the official school leaving age, so she really missed out on a year. But I went miles away to some other part of Vienna, to a Jewish school.
That must have been very painful
well,
and difficult.
It was, yes, it was, except that some of my friends came as well.
How did your teachers deliver the news that you were being sent to another school?
I don't think it was the teachers. I don't know how it must have been. My mother must have got a letter from some official organisation. I'm awfully hazy about an awful lot of things. I just remember silly little details of everything. I don't remember important things for some reason, you know.
Often it's the little details that are the most interesting.
Maybe the details. And I remember my father coming home the day that Hitler marched into Austria and just sort of collapsing into a chair and saying it's all over. And I didn't really understand what he was talking about, but he knew. He knew. And he immediately left Vienna. Immediately left, within days. He had connections abroad.
And so where did he go to?
I think it was Italy, and then Mussolini caught up with him there, and then he went to France, and then the Nazis caught up with him there. And it's actually all in the diary, all in one, as you probably, probably know about
it.
And then he ended up in England, but he didn't... I suppose you can't blame him. He didn't think that women and children would be in any danger. But most people did go as whole families. I don't know anybody else who left their wife behind, but he did.
And when was the decision taken that you should come to England?
Well, that was all after Kristallnacht, I suppose.
So could you talk a bit about the events leading up to that?
Not really, no. I was quite excited about it. I thought it was quite an adventure. I think you just had to apply, I suppose. You had to put your name down. There were guarantors, weren't there? And then they picked you. Oh, yes, you have to send photographs, and then they just pick you from your photograph. And I don't know anything about what went on behind, you know. The adults did that, but I just know that... and then we had to go for a medical checkup and wait for a visa and until they arrived. But it all happened quite soon after this Kristallnacht, didn't it? And England, of course, was the only country that had these children over.
So tell me about the journey to... England.
Well, because that's written up as well, but I wasn't particularly miserable then, and I had my sister with me, and being miserable just started when I came to England. I just thought I was, and you know, you thought you were going to see your family again, and I was probably, some children were cleverer than I, and but I don't think any of us realized that it was the end, as life as we knew it. We thought it was just temporary. But it was pretty horrendous, really, having come to England without knowing a word of the language. And
you hadn't studied English at all before?
No, my sister knew a little. No, we learned French. French was our... I knew quite a lot of French, but the French wouldn't have anybody, would they? They weren't very hospitable.
So you came from Harwich to Harwich, did you? Or which port did you disembark
in? Yes, and when we were there... Some years ago, we happened to see a plaque. There's a plaque there, isn't there, to the Kindertrans. Have you seen it?
Yes, the people of Harwich, the local history society, are very conscious of the Kindertransport history.
We just came upon this plaque, and I said to my husband, gosh, look, I was one of those children that arrived here. I didn't know we'd been on holiday and happened to... Yes, that's right, yes. Oh, it was... Probably if I hadn't written it down, I wouldn't even remember this much, because I've got one of my friends I went to school with and I'm still in touch with, who is now in Sydney. She remembers absolutely nothing. She just shut it out. Both her parents perished, and she just, if you don't want to remember something, you know, it just disappears. But because I wrote it all down, and I've reread it so often, but I probably wouldn't have been able to be of any help to you at all otherwise.
So you were writing a diary before you left Vienna?
A bit before.
What made you start writing a diary, do you think? Were you aware that you were living through historic times, or was it simply...
Not at all. I don't know. It was just the same as I like drawing. It was the way of expressing myself. Nothing. I had no thought of anybody... Oh, I quite want... At least I leave it lying around. I quite like people to have read it, but I don't think anybody bothered. But it was just a way of expressing myself, I think.
And so you continued writing the diary in German once you were in England, because it was the language that you obviously...
Yes, for a bit.
The only language you knew.
In less than a year, I wrote it in English, I think, yes.
In less than a year?
I believe so. I have to check it. It's just... Yes.
And was it a comfort to you to be able to commit your thoughts
absolutely.
To that?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. I don't know how I could have... You don't think about it, but looking back, I just had to write it down. So, I don't know if you ever kept a diary. But
yes, indeed.
It's such a relief, isn't it?
It's like someone to talk to and to tell your thoughts to.
Absolutely, they don't talk back. But it's just stupid, really, isn't it? If somebody has never kept a diary, they say, how can you think that a piece of paper can be listening to you? And but this is something that girls do more than boys, too, isn't it?
I think so.
I don't know why, for some reason. But not many people keep on it, you know, it just often became a habit.
And you've done it all your life?
Hmm.
So yes. Every single day?
Oh, no.
Not every day?
Oh, no. No, only when I feel like it. When something happens that moves me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and not only about myself, you know, and I don't know. When there was a day, you know, the war scare and, you know, the Korean War and Vietnam. Later on, I became, when I was young, I really didn't pay so much attention to what happened outside my own little world.
Mm-hmm.
But,
so when you arrived in Harwich, what happened to you immediately after then?
Well, we went to London, didn't we? We all went to London, to Liverpool Street, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a family, you see, not everybody did. Some went to hostels, but we had a family in Cornwall, and we stayed a night with some Viennese friends in London called Muller, and the next day they put us on the train to Exeter, and this family met us in Exeter, and then in their car. They were very wealthy. Even in 1939 they had two cars and two maids and three dogs, and it was quite unusual for 1939, and they lived in a beautiful house in Cornwall, in Falmouth, and they just drove us down, and then it all started.
And the family had chosen you from your photographs?
Yes,
yes.
They had chosen me, and then and another girl, they were going to take two, and then they realised I had a sister, so they very kindly swapped over and said, well, you take the two sisters, and that the other girl went somewhere else. So they hadn't any children, and didn't really know. It was a disaster, really.
It was a disaster?
It was a disaster.
Tell me why it was a disaster.
You personally know, don't you, if you've read the diary?
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Because I suppose I was hopeless, I suppose, and spoiled, and my sister got on a bit better, and they didn't, they're not having any, they had a baby then, you see, that she became pregnant, as people often do when they start adopting, they suddenly find that they have that, and then they sort of got rid of it, which was, for me, that was the best thing that could have happened, because they parked us out at in a very jolly sort of place, run by two Catholic ladies, and a little school, and I was very happy there, but with them, I didn't get on with them at all.
It must have been a comfort to have your sister there.
Yes and no. Yes and no, it was. We weren't such good friends, really. She was only 3 years older, but she was completely different. They didn't get homesick or anything, see.
Just being that little bit older, she was, I guess, that's more able to leave home behind her.
I suppose so, yes, but, sorry. She was a comfort, of course, yes, but we relied on her too much, and she couldn't be bothered, really, with her younger sister.
Do you remember all the belongings that you brought with you and what they must have meant to you at the time, your doll and all the other things?
I didn't think about it. I just thought everybody did this, just as I thought everybody kept a diary. It was just a thing a little girl would do.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a big doll I brought with me as well. A really big one. I suppose I'll leave that to you as well, called Peter. But he's with my granddaughter. I haven't got him, but he's still around.
And
books, lots of books.
Yes. And they must have reminded you of your past life and given you a sense of some security, I suppose, did they?
No, quite. I wanted to hide it all.
Really?
Of course. We didn't want to be refugees. We just wanted to be like, as soon as I went to school, nobody knew anything about either my possessions or anything, or that I spoke German or no. I didn't want anybody to know that. I just wanted to be an ordinary English girl.
Right, uh-huh. And how did you learn English?
Oh, you just pick it up. Children do, don't they? They just pick it up at school and...
So you very quickly became a little English schoolgirl,
yes,
and that's what you wanted to do, really.
Yes, I was, and yes, and in Cornwall they had no experience of foreigners at all. Everybody was very insular, but they were very nice on the whole, except our guardians. We had like, lots of friends, and but I suppose at first they did call us as the refugee children, but we just hit it. We just didn't want to be stand out. Children don't want to stand out. They want to be like everybody else.
Sure. So the place that your guardians sent you to, tell me more about that.
It was called St. Joseph's. It had been a convent at one time, I think. And they brought us up in the Catholic way. They took us to Mass and to church with them. But it was just water off the duck's back. I didn't take any notice of it, really. It wasn't important to me. I was just interested in making friends, and I didn't care what religion anybody was. But Catholics always try to convert you, don't they, for some reason.
So they had to go at that, did they?
They did, really. They always had priests to tea and so on. And then my father, when invasion was imminent, my father, I don't know how he could have thought that, but he said, if Hitler invades England, the first thing he'll do is have a go at the Jews again, and so we must be baptized and converted. But of course, everybody must have known at the time, and certainly knows now, that he didn't take any notice of that. It was of a baptism certificate, that was what you were racially. Mm. But anyway, he thought it would be better, and he didn't want us to become Catholics, because that wasn't the religion of the country. So we were baptized when I was about 17, actually, in the Protestant church. I was able to take my favorite name, and that's why I wanted to be baptized, because I could call myself Jane.
Really, that was an...
After Jane Eyre, yes.
After Jane Eyre.
Yes, oh yes. And I had instructions from the local rector, I think, and my sister first. At first I held out because I thought my mother wouldn't like it. I thought she would be upset, because she was a little bit inclined to be religious, not very much. But in the end, my father said, oh, it's just, don't be silly, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It's just in case Hitler comes, but that would not have made any difference.
Mm. So why was Jane Eyre so important a figure for you, do you think?
Oh, I just love books, and I love reading, and I just probably just read it. And I thought I would meet, now I'm Jane, I'll meet my Mr. Rochester.
That's a very good reason.
Yeah.
And what contact did you have with your parents at this time when you were at St. Joseph's?
Well, my father was in Paris, I think, at that time, so that was all right. But, of course, as soon as the war started, we lost contact with my mother. We had a few messages via an uncle in Switzerland through the Red Cross. And then that all stopped, of course.
Mm.
Yes, quite soon after the war started, it stopped, and we didn't know what happened.
But your father maintained contact?
Yes.
From Paris?
With us, he did.
Yes.
Yes, until Paris fell.
And what happened to him then?
Well, then he caught the last boat to England, and guess where he landed? In Plymouth, which is only about 60 miles from where we were. But in literally just a blanket, which I've still got, but one of those horse blankets things that they gave to soldiers, I think, and that, and the clothes he stood up in, he came, and we literally, out of our pocket money, had to buy him a toothbrush and something, and things, handkerchiefs and things like that, out of our pocket money.
So did he live near you then?
Well,
he did.
He joined the Pioneer Corps. You know,
mm-hmm.
you know what they were.
Yes.
For.
Yes.
That's what he did, because of course he hadn't any money. And then, but he soon got invalided out of that because of his heartache or something. And then he just started his business again in England. And he did very well, actually. He did very well. And he ended up marrying a very beautiful English girl. And once it was established after the war, that my mother was dead. And he did very well.
And he lived in...
Well, he went to London quite soon. He lived in London and started... I don't really remember where he lived. He lived in Truro for a time, that's right. He lived in Truro and started his business there so that he could be near us. And for a time he even tried to move in together for a bit, but that didn't work out. You can't pick these things up again once your family split up. We couldn't really get together again. It didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went to London and remarried and...
And tell me more about when he arrived from Paris that time in the horse blanket, and you were having to look after him. I mean, there must have been a very dramatic...
Yes, and we hadn't seen him for 2 years, and that's a long time in a child's life.
Mm.
And couldn't really get on with him at all. Wasn't not at all a happy relationship. And he'd always wanted sons anyway, so, you know, it's got... Certainly wanted me to be a boy, so we went... You know, I was really my mother's little girl. I wanted her. I wasn't unusual, because little girls usually prefer their dads.
Yes, yes.
That's how it is with you.
Yes,
with you.
It is rather. Really? Well, I have a close relationship with
my
father.
I
yes,
know. I
yes.
Know every people who have this, but I never did.
Mm-hmm.
So all the dice were loaded against it, really.
Mm-hmm.
But he did well for himself.
And you maintained contact throughout the war?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
But there was a sort of a recognition that it wasn't working out for you to live under the same roof.
No. And there was no money. No, we were still with those guys. They were actually responsible. They had to pay for us till we were 18.
Mm-hmm.
For me, anyway. Oh, the Rotary Club, I think. I think the Rotary Club paid for me, actually, also. And but as soon as my father had made some money, he paid every penny back to those guardians. He didn't want to owe anything to anybody. Every penny he paid back to them, he just, you know, they took it. Well, understandably, I suppose.
But very conscientious of him.
Yes. Oh, yes. He did all the right things. He lacked in the emotions, but he did all the right things.
Mm.
I'm not sure whether the Robinses, they were called, whether they should have taken it, but they did. I don't know what, you know. It's a moral thing, really, isn't it?
Yes.
Because they were quite. He was a local notary, and he was very well off. But anyway, my father probably insisted.
Mm.
He didn't want to owe anything.
Mm. So tell me more about your memories of rural Cornwall during the war.
Oh, it was the happiest period. Of all the terrible things that were going on, the Holocaust, and I was very happy there. I loved it at school, and I liked, and it was open house, and all the boys came to the house, and they had lots of friends, and it was really jolly, just very nice for young people. They were very good to young people.
So tell me more about the place where you were living.
What, the house where we lived?
Yes.
Well, it had no electricity.
Really?
And the radio, it was my job on Saturday mornings to buy these old batteries with sulfuric acid in them, you know. Because that's when the radio got quieter and quieter, we knew that the battery needed filling with sulfuric acid. You can't imagine that now, can you?
No.
And I had to go and that was... but of course you don't mind that or anything like that as a child. And it was very primitive. No phone, of course, no electricity. We had oil lamps. But that wasn't usual. I think most places did have electricity at that time, even down there.
So were you in a village?
It was Falmouth.
In Falmouth.
Yes, a large sort of rambling, as I say, it had been a convent. Very cold. It really was. I mean, Cornwall is supposed to be much warmer, certainly, than up here. I've never been so cold in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, in Vienna you had these stoves, which were so efficient. But there was nothing there. There was a coal fire in the drawing room and an oil stove that you carried around from bedroom to bedroom when it was really cold. And there's a sort of... It's so damp, isn't it? There's such a moist... cold in Cornwall. I really was cold there. That was the worst thing. That was, they didn't seem to feel it. I thought they were used to it. Kitchen was warm. It was very primitive, but I didn't mind. I was very happy there, on the whole, apart from being cold in the winter.
And what did you do when you weren't at school, when you had your free time?
Oh, well, I went out lots of times and with friends and these two ladies, Miss Davies they were called, they were, although they must have been in their 50s, they were very youthful. We used to take picnics to the beach and go to the pavilion for little local shows, and I think they belonged to some theatrical group, and there was never a dull moment. And we used to play table tennis all the time in the garden shed, and all the boys from the church came, and it was open house to everybody. It was really lovely.
It sounds quite progressive, really.
In a way.
But the sexes to have mixed in that way.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And yes, there were. I think it was more literature. I think I know in a way, but yet when I acquired an American boyfriend when I was about 17, towards the end of my stay there, they were very strict about that. They didn't want me to go out with an American. They had been so easygoing all the time with the local boys, the Catholic boys, and so on. But when an American wanted to take a girl, somebody that lived there, you know, they put their foot down. They wouldn't allow it.
They had a bit of a reputation, perhaps.
That's what it was, the reputation, and there were all these girls getting pregnant and so on, and there were two maiden ladies, but, you know, I don't say that was the reason, but, spontaneously, my father didn't really like the whole household. He thought it was too easygoing, and he would have preferred to stay with the rich family, and, you know, normal. He was a real conformer. There was a more normal household.
And was your sister with you at this point?
She was with me all the time until she left school at 17, which was a few years... When would that have been? She was born in 24, anyway. So, and then she wanted to do war work, so she did nursing, and she went to London then. So the last 2 years, she left, and I was stayed on till I left school in Falmouth.
And that was your sister moving on? That was something you were fine about, or was it a difficulty?
I was actually very upset. I was. Because she was my only relative, yes. And I was very upset that she went. But she was determined to do something for the war.
Mm.
And there was really nothing doing down there. You couldn't go in the Renz or anything as a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, but... you cope with it.
Mm. And as you got older, and how conscious of you and how much of an interest did you take in the progress of the war in Europe and think to what was happening in your native Austria? Did that occupy much of your mind?
It should have occupied much more of my mind than it did. But I do remember distinctly when the Germans marched into Russia and somebody came up. It was Sunday morning, having breakfast in the summer, and somebody came up, the brother of one of these ladies came up, and he was holding the newspaper, and he said, wonderful news, the Russians are now in the war. And I thought, now why is that good news? Why is it such good news that the Russians have joined the war? But then, of course, I understood it quite soon. But, you know, just saying the Russians have joined the war, why should that be good news? But I probably wasn't intelligent enough to grasp immediately that we would now have another ally. I do remember bits and pieces of the war, and of course there were some bombs in Falmouth. I was nearly killed once, as you know, and I'm walking out of. Yes, of course the war did touch everybody, and at school, of course, we had a trench where we used to grow things all around the hockey field, and lessons were interrupted. But on the whole, it wasn't like living in London, of course.
Tell me more about the bomb incident.
You probably read it anyway in the diary, have you?
But it's interesting to hear it's in your words.
A friend and I, the one I was telling you, is now sadly in an old in Alzheimer's. She has Alzheimer's now, but we were great friends. And we used to go out in the evening when we'd done our homework and buy chips to eat. I never eat chips now, but I loved them then. But we were always told not to go to town because of the sailors and the soldiers and... we could go for a walk, but we wouldn't want to go to town, but we did. And we were walking past the Wesleyan Chapel, and a bomb dropped. I mean, it must have been as near the door, so it seemed. But you don't hear it. We just heard a whistle and people running, and we looked, and there was where this chapel had been. It was just rubble. We couldn't understand how we were still alive. It was really amazing, but you heard amazing stories like that about bombs. You heard... and houses being bombed and eggs not being broken and things like that. Amazing things like that happened, didn't they? I mean, that's not a myth. That really is, there's probably some scientific explanation. Anyway, we weren't killed, but we had to go home, and of course we had to tell them then. I had to tell these two ladies what happened. And said, we were nearly killed, and this bomb dropped. And, well, what are you doing in town? You know you weren't allowed to go to town. I said, we were nearly killed. Well, you see what happens when you disobey.
Yeah.
It's the nearest I got to the war, really. But, I don't suppose they even have newspapers coming to the house, except for the radio. And yes, I did know what was. I remember hearing Lord Haw Haw, and of course.
Listening to Lord Haw Haw must have been. What did you make of him?
Oh, well, I couldn't understand how anybody English could. I couldn't understand how anybody could prefer the Germans. That's a vile place as Germany to a happy place like England, where, you know, where life was so compassionate and, you know, nobody. Persecuted anybody. How could he possibly prefer a country like a man like Hitler? I really don't know to this day what the answer is to that. Why did he?
Mm-hmm. A mystery, yes.
A complete mystery.
Mm-hmm.
An English aristocrat, wasn't he?
Yes, yes.
Anyway, he got his... He said, oh, yes, I do. But I didn't really write about the war very much. Only, bits and pieces, I suppose, I think. Little bits and pieces. But I think when you're growing up, you're so busy growing up, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
School and boyfriends and girlfriends and all the physical changes that take place. I did think about my mother all the time. That was so terrible. That was the one thing. But I wouldn't talk to anybody about it because that would immediately single me out as being different from the others.
So the fact that you had come as a refugee meant you didn't... You wanted to sort of put that behind
of
you,
course,
and so you had to
course.
Keep it to yourself, the fact.
Absolutely. I remember there was one girl there who... We'd had a quarrel, and she said, oh, you're Austrian, aren't you? Never Jewish. That was never held against me. You're Austrian. But that itself was an insult. And I did something I've never done before or since. I really hit her. I hit her with my satchel full of books, and I thought I'd killed her. I said, don't ever say that again. Just being Austrian, that was a real insult. When you think how proud them, I mean, you know, the people that are over here from Pakistan and so on, they don't feel like that about their country, do they?
No.
They're probably quite proud.
Mm.
But then they weren't sort of, you know, the underdogs, and they weren't told to leave, were they, as we were?
Exactly. So you felt quite a lot of anger against the regime, obviously, that had caused such upset and feud.
I must have known they are thinking they deprived me of my home, my mother, my language, everything. Of course, that was there all the time.
And what was the last contact you had with your mother? Did you have Red Cross letters at all?
It must have been a message from, yes, and you had to write in code. For some reason you had to call everybody, but you hadn't to disclose the relationship you had with them. It was sort of coded messages, I think, I got via the Red Cross. But that was very early on in the war only, and then nobody knew anymore what happened to the people.
And tell me more about the radio that you listened to, that you had to power up with these batteries every morning. What sort of programs did you listen to?
I don't remember what we listened to, really. When did ITMA start? Did that start in the war?
Yes, it was on in the war.
It must have been ITMA I listened to. And what else did we hear? No, you didn't know that much, really. The news, I suppose. I listened to the news. I always wanted, I think I was a bit, the thing that bothered me was that they had a different sort of culture from mine, so they didn't like classical, they would never listen to classical music, and I was brought up on that, and there was never any classical music on, and if I had a chance I heard classical music on the radio, you know, it didn't mean anything to anybody, and I didn't miss that. But it was sort of, again, I pushed that away because I knew it was foreign. If you like classical music, you weren't...
It was marking you out.
Marking me out, absolutely, yes. I didn't miss that. There was a different culture altogether.
Hmm.
I suppose in London maybe you wouldn't have felt that so much.
Perhaps not, but I imagine a rural existence, the differences are more accentuated, really. You'd have had another urban existence in London. Like
more,
in Vienna.
Met people of your own background more,
yes,
of course.
Perhaps, yes.
And I tried to fit in. But they knew loads of things that I didn't know, of course.
So tell me about I think it was cycle rides you said that you went on with your friends and going to Helford Passage and